The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for being part of the program on this Thursday night or Saturday morning, whichever is your liking, or could be the podcast as well. I'm actually recording this on a Tuesday afternoon because I am traveling to Dallas on Wednesday for a conference, Thursday and Friday. Back on Saturday, I'm going to miss the Indiana, who are we playing? Western Kentucky on Saturday. But then off to Indianapolis that night for the Miracle Maker event for the Children's Organ Transplant Association. And back for Sunday afternoon youth football. So another busy weekend. I get to the office on Monday mornings and I'm like, I need to be here so I can actually just focus and not be running to the next thing. So weekends are certainly busy again, and conferences are in full swing. So this fall will be a very busy time for me. I'll actually be in Florida next week. This will be a little more vacation-y with some friends, and I'll have the guys of the office taking over next week for the show. Josh Norris, he'll be coming on to talk about Medicare open enrollment period and all kinds of other great things that they'll have in store for you. All right, like I said last week, no more by the numbers, no more Mick Higley. Mick's on a long, extended, well-deserved vacation, and he'll be a guest in the next month or so. So no more little tidbits of the week that I used to steal from Mick. And I've looked all around for someone to provide just some little quick hits, you know, on think about this, think about that. But I'm going to ditch all that for now and use this as a market insight segment. Okay, so first time for this, and you listen. If you listen to the radio station, you'll hear me do a weekly commentary. It's about 2 minutes long, usually runs starting around Wednesday of the week, and we'll run through the weekend, and then I'll record a new one, and then that will run. So this is just a little bit from the news of the week, the market insights of the week, and basically kind of looking back, right? So we always look at the week before. So last week, we had that holiday shortened week of trading. Stocks posted healthy gains despite more tough talk on monetary policy from the Feds. The Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ all picked up some points for the week. It was interesting because stocks fell coming off the Labor Day weekend, dragged down by news that Russia was cutting off natural gas supplies to European customers. Stocks were also under pressure due to surprisingly strong report on business conditions with heightened fears the Fed would continue their slam. Sentiment then quickly improved as bond yields turned lower and oil prices fell. The market reacted positively to comments by a Fed chairperson who reiterated the Fed's commitment to squashing inflation while acknowledging the risk of going too far. So the market is so, we're going to talk to Rod about this, so wanting to grab hold of little comments to move forward. Well, then stocks added to their gains last Thursday, as the market digested another speech from Fed Chairman Powell and the likelihood of a 75 basis point hike coming soon. We also saw that happen in Europe as well. The European Central Bank rose their rates by 0.75. The markets then surged on Friday amid little news, ending on a positive note for the week. Well, guess what? There's been no inflation walk back. Since the first public comments since his speech at Jackson Hole that sent markets into a tailspin, the Fed Chairman Powell did not seek to soften the edges on the Fed's comments to fighting inflation. In an interview last Thursday, Powell reaffirmed the need for sustained and robust actions to bring down inflation. He emphasized that it was critical that the longer inflation remains well above the target, the greater the risk is to the public and we're going to see higher inflation as the norm. So they are committed to this. And then guess what? Here on Tuesday, as I record this, the numbers came out and they were higher than expected on inflation, and the market tanked. It actually was up in pre-market on Tuesday, but when the market realized, uh-oh, inflation really is here and it's higher than we expected, then the idea of the Fed coming out and putting a big rate hike on of 75 basis points or more, there's actually a 20% probability of 101% move next week when they come together to raise rates. And then another 50 basis points in November, 50 in December, getting that to 4 to almost 5% by the end of the year. And that still may not be enough. So a lot of stuff happening. Thursday, when this show goes, we'll have retail sales numbers, industrial production, jobless claims. Friday, how consumers feel. That'll be out. But like I said, Tuesday, as we record the show, CPI came out hotter than expected. When we come back, let's talk to Hot Rod, see what he has to say about where we are on things today. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. The markets want to react in a positive way. If you say one little thing that sounds somewhat remotely to the side of caution when it comes to the Fed, the market wants to take off. It does. It doesn't make any sense. Then we have numbers like came out today as I record this on Tuesday. Inflation numbers came out hot. The market changed course, and in the red we became. So, Rod, the Fed is going to talk tomorrow, but they're going to meet next week, likely to raise rates, not maybe just 75 basis points. Now even 1% on the table. I doubt that happens. I think the Fed will stick to their 75 basis point gun. But we still have a long road ahead on this move to squash inflation. And I think the thing I want you to discuss is that the market moves in expectation of what is likely to happen, and then it will adjust on realities. Well, the expectation now, big shock, right? Inflation was higher than expected a little bit. The market tanked because now they know for sure what the Fed's going to do. But then it'll continue to look for hope and optimism in the words that the Fed uses, because most of what the Fed does is they talk, right? What they do is just confirming what they said they would likely do. But 90%, in my opinion, of what the market reacts to is the Fed's word. So here we sit today on a Tuesday as we record this for the Thursday night airing. Inflation numbers came in just a little hot this morning. We've got other data coming this week. But you can't fight this Fed. Don't try to fight this Fed. It's happening. And when you can't fight it, you just have to play along. Right, Rod?
Yeah, exactly. And it was the same scenario as far as on the way up coming out of the 08 financial crisis and the so-called Fed put on the market that didn't allow the market to drop all that far after the crash in that financial crisis. Well, now the Fed is on the opposite side of the table of where we were at from 08 until this most recent sell-off that started at the beginning of this year. Not that the Fed is purposely trying to make the market sell off, but realistically, that is part of slowing demand down. Mm-hmm. I mean, people, if they feel less wealthy, they spend a little bit less. And we're talking, obviously, the high net worth person. The people at the bottom of the income or net worth area, you know, of course, they're the ones that are having to make the tough decisions between, do I buy this product that I need or that product that I need? Because they are starting to have to make some of those tough choices. The people at the top, the high net worth that we just spoke of, they got more than enough money to do this. But when they feel less wealthy, they tend to slow their spending down as well. So it's all part of the thing. Once again, the Fed's never going to come out and say, look, we want to see the stock market tank and go down to this level. Same thing, they're never going to come out and directly say, we want to see unemployment jump up to 5% or 5.5% or whatever that magic number may be. But those are the things that come along with slowing down demand. There is less consumption, which mm-hmm. then leads to less demand, which leads to less need for workers. And now you start to lay some people off and unemployment begins to grow. And the market has to begin to reset and get to a more reasonable price-to-earnings multiple based on what the future conditions look like. Well, we know the future conditions include higher interest rates and higher inflation than what we have dealt with in the past, which means we're going to play a lower earnings multiple for that. But it is always curious, the market's reaction. So the number that came out on Tuesday as we're recording this, but replaying it on Thursday, as you said, the expectation was for inflation on a yearly basis to come in at 8.1. It came in at 8.3, so a little bit hotter than expected. The reality is, whether you're at 8 flat, 8.1, 8.3, you're a long ways away from 2. So I'm not exactly sure where the market was starting to get excited about a possible 8.1 instead of an 8.3, and then the market kind of pukes itself up when the number comes out at 8.3 instead of 8.1. The reality is we have a long ways to go in this battle of inflation. Not all of it will be solved simply by interest rates, because some of it is the problem within the labor market, in which you have certain sectors and certain jobs that just are not being refilled after job losses coming out of the pandemic, and it is creating some issues from the standpoint of getting consistent supplies all across the country in the products of everyday need. And that's what you and I talked about this morning, Dave, is it's great that we're seeing lumber prices and certain commodity prices, copper and things like that, come down. That's a good start. But the reality is, until the products that the consumer has to deal with on a daily and weekly basis, until they start to feel relief in those prices, well, they're still going to be constrained in consumption, and consumption drives 70% of the GDP here in the United States.
You know, when you talked about the psyche of people, I've always argued this for 20 plus, 25, almost 30 years, that even if you have no money in the stock market, somehow the stock market affects your psyche. Like you said, if everyone's talking about how bad it is out there, then people react a certain way. I remember during some of the recessions of the past where people would say, just choose not to mentally participate in this. Just choose not to go down that path. I said that during 2020 and 2021 on this show. You can choose to participate in a mindset of negativity, worry, concern, or you can not. And I've always said that it's the mindset that drives everything. We can have a will set, right? I want to do this. I want to be here. I want to succeed. You can have a certain God-given skill set, but it is your mindset that drives everything. And Bob Knight used to say that 90 plus percent of performance on the basketball court was your mindset. You know, regardless of how skillful you were or how willing you wanted to be on the team, it's your mindset. And I truly believe that that is absolutely 100% accurate. So with that said, you don't want people to bail out on the market, because that's the exactly wrong thing to do, because of even if they're going to continue to try to weaken this thing, remember, the market moves in expectation. What it believes they're trying to do is what's believed is going to happen. It will adjust and go up quicker than you even think it should. It'll happen when it's least expected. And that's why, Rod, you can't say, okay, I'm just going to pull everything out, sit here for a while, and wait till it looks like it's getting better, because then you'll miss out on the first part of the rebound. And it always happens that way. It has happened. We've been doing this a long time. I can't think of a time where the market moved up and you could literally look in at the data and say, yeah, this makes sense why we'd be going up. So you got to stay in there when you're in there.
Yeah, that's why it's so important to have the dollars properly allocated based on the time horizons and when those dollars are needed, because it is extremely difficult to predict these short-term things. The longer you're exposed to equities, the less risk you have in achieving positive results out of those equities that you own. But that isn't 6 months, 9 months. That's not necessarily 1 year. That's talking 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. So, yeah, there's no reason to panic at this point. If you have dollars that were allocated that you don't need for 10, 20 years off down the road, yes, it's no fun getting the statements, seeing them go down like this. Hopefully you're still contributing, because that's what I tell people in the accumulation phase. Well, it isn't any fun to open your statements and see how much the current investments you own have gone down. You have to also retool mentally and say, you know what? While those investments are down, I'm also buying more of those investments at a cheaper price than what I was a month ago, 3 months ago, or 6 months ago. that's what you really want in the accumulation phase. You don't want to constantly be buying higher and higher and higher, because eventually there is going to be a correction. The market will never just go straight up, as it will never just go straight down. So to your point of the negativity and maybe what people are feeling and seeing with the sell-off this week and inflation, it can make you feel bad. But the reality is, all of this stuff will be fixed. We'll figure out our supply chain issues. We will figure out the logistics issues. We will get inflation down to a manageable level. It just may take some time, and be patient with that along the way. The only thing that we can suggest now as you go through this, begin to truly evaluate the time horizon on when you need those dollars, what the need is for. Is it a need or a want? Because if it's a want, you can delay that purchase potentially off. But that's the most important thing, is after you find out where your real risk tolerance is, which we typically don't find until we have a meaningful sell-off, then that's when you have to start beginning to set those dollars in the appropriate buckets and risk levels on those asset classes based on when those dollars will be needed.
So this is something that comes from market intel that we have access to, and just interesting because, again, it goes to the to your point. But here's an example of 2008, a $10,000 investment, and there's four different scenarios. One, after the crash occurred in 2009, the bottom was March of 2009, and the market, by the way, started to look more positive around May, even though it made no sense. But nonetheless, in one case, a person freaked out, put all their money in cash, and at the end of 2021, their $10,000 at the end of 2021, from 2008 to 2021, was worth a whopping $6,100. The other scenario was kind of an uncertain person. They went ahead and went to cash at the start of 2009, and then thought, okay, a year later, I feel better about this. I'm going to put my money back in. They now have $26,000. Someone that just stayed the course, made no changes at all, $32,000 at the end of 2021. But the optimistic person, which is what you and I talked about this morning, which is completely the opposite of what people typically do, they said, you know what, I had $10,000 in, and I got to the start of 2009, I'm going to put another $10,000 in. Well, guess what? At the end of 2021, they had over $85,000. That's the right way to do things. But people typically over time, Rod, have done the complete wrong thing when it comes to money. I always say real estate and stocks are like the opposite of everything else. When they're going up, everyone wants to hurry up and buy. When it's going down, they want to get out and avoid. Unlike going to a sale at Dick's Sporting Goods, right, or anything else, we rush in the door when there's a sale, but we don't really want to buy that hat for $25 that I so severely wanted the other day at Dick's, but I will let it go because I'm like, I'm not paying $25 for that. But if they had a sale and it was 20% off, I might buy it. But we look at stocks and real estate the complete opposite. I'll let you comment on that, and then we'll let you go.
Yeah, we most certainly do. We discussed that a little bit this morning, as you said, that at the point in time that your gut is telling you, I just don't want to buy any more stock, is probably the appropriate time to buy stock. And not because it's going to turn around the very next day or the very next minute after you buy it, but because if you own quality companies and they have gone down in valuation, they are cheaper today, they will have a return to earnings and revenue growth at some point in the future. That's where we're at right now. We're trying to settle in. What's the earnings and revenue for the next couple of quarters as things are slowing? But then growth will return and begin to take off, and prices will begin to follow them. So buying at the point in time that it feels like it's the wrong thing to do typically is the right thing, which is just the opposite on the buying. When things are going great and you're making money hand over fist and every statement that comes in, you can't believe how much more it's worth, that's when people are excited and enthusiastic to buy more. And more than likely, they're buying at a fairly high point at that point in time. That's when they should be considering, oh, maybe I need to start pooling some money, wait for a correction to jump back in. So yes, it is very difficult psychologically for people to do the right thing at the right time, because what they should be doing is typically the opposite of what their gut is telling them to do.
You know, it's funny, I go back and look at this intel, and it says that from the bottom of the market in 2009, 6 months later, the market had grown 53%. So it happens quick, and that's why you have to stay in. Even though back then, Rod, I remember thinking, nothing's changed. Nothing's changed, but yet the market took off. Rod, thanks as always. Great job. We'll listen for you on Glass in the Afternoon on Friday, on Big Show Friday, and have a great rest of the week, because I won't be at the ranch this week. I'll be down in Dallas at a conference, so I'll see you before I leave.
Sounds good. Safe travels, Dave, and have a great show.
Let's take a break. When we come back, a really good article I ran across on the Wall Street Journal. It's called, Here's What a $2 Million Retirement Looks Like in America. I thought it was interesting because, you know, I'm always coaching people on mindset and how to approach things and how to see past the trees to see the forest and all that kind of stuff. Use every analogy that I can pull out of my head right now. But nonetheless, it's a really good article. I'm going to share some of the highlights with you when I come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. So what does a $2 million retirement look like in America? I remember, you know, in the 90s, man, if you could have $1 million, man, you'd just be on Easy Street, right? Well, like back then, many people had pensions, right? Social Security pensions. So they didn't rely on their savings as much. Well, then once the pension plans kind of got squished for most people, then it became, okay, now I have Social Security, but everything else has to come from me. So most Americans, and this is in the article, retirement advice is limited to encouragement to save more or warnings that they're not going to have near enough. So they live in this fear that I'm not going to have enough to retire. Most people get very little guidance, and this is what I loved about this article so much, or give little thought to what to do with all of those savings once they reach that next chapter of life. Whether they are decades, years, or months from retirement, it can be hard to imagine a life that a 401k ultimately buys. And it's incredibly difficult to erase the anxiety about whether you are spending too much each year. Basically, people haven't really thought through what retirement's going to look like or feel like. They quickly realize they have a lot of time to fill. You need more than a financial plan. You need a life plan. And that's why I love this class that we've been teaching at Ivy Tech for many years, Well, it was in our book, too, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. But it's Retirement Planning Today is the name of the course. You can sign up through the Center for Lifelong Learning. I've been teaching this course down at General Motors to their folks down there for the last few months. And it's about life planning. The very first section is on life planning. How do you get your mindset correct? How do you make sure you have fulfillment of time, not just fill up your time? So the article spoke in depth with four retirees who saved enough to build a comfortable retirement plan from a financial standpoint, net worths ranging from $2 million to $4 million. They shared insights about how they spend their time, their money, what has given them joy or anxiety, and how their expectations of life and retirement measured up to the reality, right? Their expectations, once again, were this, but then we had the reality. The four lived in different parts of the country. They're from all different phases of and ages of life, with one just entering retirement at 61, and the other one is in his 80s. So they offered some insight into some of the challenges that retirees, even those with a lot of money, face today. They also shared advice on the importance of having a sense of purpose in your post-career years, keeping engaged through paid or volunteer work, or just periodically reevaluating one's needs and desires in response to aging and other changes. So it's a good article. You should be able to Google it. It's called Here's What a $2 Million Retirement Looks Like in America. Or if you email us at cfci.us, like many of you have, for that Maximize Social Security Retirement Benefits Guide that we have given them all away now. But nonetheless, I'll send it to you. But there's one in here about a retired police lieutenant that after 33 years in the force, he had a deferred compensation plan worth about $1.7 million, and he is spending about $144,000 a year gross. He has a pension, which is unlike the other three in here. So we have this across the board. It's really good. If you get a chance, I think it would be helpful for someone who is thinking, okay, what am I going to do when I retire? People across America will say, yeah, I feel comfortable with the amount of money I have saved for retirement. But how do you take money out? So important. And that's in this article about how important it is to understand how you take money out of a plan. What's the purpose of your life? It's all in here. It's a good thing to read. It's not going to solve all your issues, but it will give you some things to think about and things to consider before you finally just pull the trigger and say, I'm out. All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, I mentioned the Maximizing Social Security Retirement Benefit Guide. Well, I downloaded one for myself and printed it off. I want to give you a couple of cool highlights from it and tell you that it could be the best $29 you ever spent. It is terrific. And maybe it's not necessarily for you to read and to make a definitive decision on exactly what you need to do when it comes to Social Security, but it educates the tar out of you about Social Security. In fact, I would be hard-pressed, I think, to find many financial professionals that would know all the details that are in this guide. We bought several of them. We gave them away to people, listeners, who emailed and said, I'd like to have that guide. We sent them all out. We had a few left going into week two, and we gave the rest of those away as well. But I kept one for myself, being a little selfish there, but I needed one and did not want to let it slip through my fingers. So I'll be right back. Talk a little bit about that and more. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. I am such a big fan, of course, you know that, of Mary Beth Franklin, investment news contributing editor, and also the author of Maximizing Social Security Retirement Benefits, new for 2022, guidance on how future retirees can make the most of their retirement benefits. And I ordered several, gave away several, kept one for myself, and it is outstanding. Chapter one goes through just the ABCs of Social Security. Chapter 2 goes into what I think are more like the myths of what are still available but are not. She called them the disappearing strategies. There's a complete chapter on married couples. There's a complete chapter on widows or widowers. There's a complete chapter on those that have been married but yet divorced. There's a chapter on disability. There's a chapter on exceptions for public employees. There's a chapter on don't forget about the kids, and this is basically when you're eligible for benefits and you have kids under 18. The do-over strategy, chapter 9, that's when you say, wow, I didn't realize I had all these other options. I wish I had a do-over. Well, there is a do-over strategy, and she talks about that in chapter 9. Chapter 10, how do you file for benefits? That's important to note. Do I have to go down and knock on the Social Security office door? No, they don't even want you to do that anymore. They want you to go online. So she walks you through exactly how to file your benefits online. She has a chapter on how benefits are taxed. I love this one because this hasn't really changed much in years, but people get real confused over earnings limitations and taxation of benefits. That's all in there. It goes into Social Security and Medicare in Chapter 12. And then Chapter 13 are the new rules of Social Security that you need to know about, new strategies that are available that you probably didn't know existed. And I'll tell you, it's worth every penny. I broke it down per page. It's 41 pages long. And for $29, that equals about 70 cents a page. I would pay a dollar a page, maybe more than that. But it is so super easy to order. When you go, just Google it, Mary Beth Franklin or Maximizing Social Security, or if you need the link, just email us at cfci.us. We'll send it to you and buy it. $29, you'll get the download. You can print it off, which I did. And man, I just dig into it because it's really, 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 really good. And if I could use the word really one more time, I will, but it is that good. So please order it. Support people that support this show. Mary Beth Franklin, of course, a longtime contributor of this program, longtime contributor to other programs, including major media outlets. Consuelo Mack, she's on that program at least 2 to 3 times a year, which is probably one of the most premier financial literacy shows anywhere. But yeah, so please support her. And when you buy it, and she'll know that there was a surge because of what happened here on this program, not that she wouldn't come back anyway. She doesn't do it for that. She does it because she has a real passion and always has, just like Ed Slott always had. And oh, by the way, you can make money doing this too. is educating people about the importance of knowing Social Security, knowing about taxes, knowing about retirement plan distributions, because that's been Ed's mission. Ed Slott, he'll be on here in a few weeks, but his mission is to educate consumers, match them with competent advisors. If you go to his website, irahelp.com, that's irahelp.com, you'll see what I'm talking about. There's a lot of free resources there. There's a list of the Ed Slott trained advisors. Of course, I'm part of that charter member group that started the group many, many years ago. I'm on there back when I was much, much younger. I was trying to figure out, I still haven't got my head around this. I'm 52 years old now. I was in my 30s. Will was just a baby, maybe he was five or less than five. He wasn't even in school yet. And he's now going to be 22. So I have to have been in the group at least like 17, 18 years. So it's about that old. It's hard to believe. I mean, all the things that have happened and transpired. And I say this when I'm speaking with people that want to join Ed's group, that have gone through his training, that then are offered the opportunity to join the elite group, there's a membership fee, but I appreciate the people that spend money on their education, even though they're very seasoned in their careers. I think it's important. I mean, I spend more, granted, I went to school, college in, you know, late 80s when it was like hardly anything compared to today, but I spend more now on an annual basis on education than I did when I was in college. And that's only going up. So it's important. And I think people like Mary Beth, people like Ed Slott, it's good for the listeners to, you know, support them as well, because they're trying to do something that's really, really great. And they're being part of this program, which I greatly appreciate. So again, maximizing Social Security benefits, it's great. 70 cents a page, $29 for the entire 41-page package. And if you need the link, just email us at cfci.us and we will take care of you. All right, what's next? So this is something that doesn't happen a lot, but it's worth mentioning. What are some keys to making a decision between a pension payment that I'm going to take forever or a lump sum? Being fully informed is the key decision there as well. Because there's a few people that still have that option of saying, okay, now I have an option of taking a lump sum or a monthly pension payment, which is better? We'll dig into a little bit of the math on that when we come back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. I will be headed to Dallas on Wednesday. I'll be there through Friday evening. Then I'm going to fly with a buddy of mine to Cumberland Lake, where we're going to spend the evening striper fishing, and then the next morning, I think we're going to do some duck hunting on Saturday morning, and then come back to Bloomington that afternoon to then make my way to Indianapolis for the Miracle Maker event, which is a Children's Organ Transplant Association sponsored charity event, kind of an appreciation event for donors throughout the years, and then head on into Sunday, then back to the office on Monday. But then next week, I'll be in Florida for a little vacation with my wife and a couple friends of ours who are the big Disney vacation people. And we're staying at the Wilderness Lodge, which is kind of cool. And those little, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but they have like little huts that are sort of on the water, and that's where we're going to stay. And I'm going to do some bass fishing while I'm down in Florida, because you can fish at Disney World. People don't know this, but it's one of the best kept secrets. I don't know why they keep, I guess they don't, they'd rather have you in the park buying, you know, $10 Cokes than they do once you're on the water fishing for bass. But it's incredible. If you ever go down there and you want to blow a good 4 to 6 hours in the morning, and that's what I do. I get up at 6 a.m. The boat people will meet you if you're at a resort where there's water. You jump on and you go fishing. And then like 4 hours later, you come back around 10 o'clock. The family's up and at them by then. Go have some breakfast. Go hit the parks and do it again. So I'm planning to go fishing a couple times while I'm down there. So I'll report back on that in the following week. But in my absence, the guys from the office, Doug Hughes, Wayne, Ryan, Josh, they're going to take the show next week, and I'm sure they'll do a great job. They always do. All right, so let's talk about this. Not many people have a pension anymore. We've talked about that. It's well documented, but there are still a few, and I'm thinking about General Motors right now. General Motors legacy employees still have a pension, and they have an option. They can take a lump sum, or they can take it over time. Well, what are some of the big factors in deciding whether or not I should take a lump sum over a monthly pension? Well, one, how do you handle money, right? I think about it like the lotto. You know, when you win the lotto, you can take it over like 20 years or you can take it all up front. Well, why would you take it over 20 years? Well, if you're not very good with money and you have to look yourself in the mirror and say, what would I do if I had all this money? If you don't have any other savings, if you have debt, you're probably not very good with money. So you need to realize your weaknesses, right, and play to your strengths. So you might want to consider taking monthly payments. But in this environment, because they usually allow you to look in the rearview mirror and say, what were the interest rates last year? And I get to make a decision now based on interest rates going forward. Well, when interest rates go up, lump sums go down. Now, you might think, I don't understand that. Well, think about it in terms of a mortgage. If a $3,000 mortgage payment at 3% on a 30-year mortgage would sustain a loan of $710,000, if the rate goes to 5, the same $3,000 would sustain a mortgage at $558,000. Well, lump sums work the same way. If they're promising to pay you $3,000 a month, then your lump sum might be $750,000 or something like that. If interest rates go up, which they have substantially, then they only need to provide $558,000 to provide you the same $3,000. So lump sums work the same way. So the advantage right now is that if you take a lump sum, you're taking it today based on that lower rate, which means a lot bigger payment. But then here you have the money, you get to reinvest that at higher rates and a lower stock market. So I think about the times of the past, like in 2008, 2009, we had a bunch of people retire with some lump sum pensions, mostly out of the phone company, AT&T at the time, here in Bloomington. And I look back at the success that they've had because they were able to pull this money out at some really, when rates were low and lump sums really high, and then reinvest that into a market that was way low, and then look at the success they've had over this long, long period of time. This opportunity exists right now, again, for very few people. But if you're contemplating whether you should take a lump sum or not, please reach out to us so we can have this discussion. Now, the other complicated situation is, how old are you? Because not just interest rates, but age. The younger you are, the bigger the lump sum. Why? Because they have to pay a longer time. If you're like 70 or 80 and you have a look at it, you say, well, you know, a lump sum's not that big because they don't have you living 30 years plus. And how old is your spouse? Is your spouse younger? Are they older? That goes into the calculation. So there's a lot of other things that dictate what that lump sum looks like. It's not just interest rates, but that is the number one primary driver of what a lump sum looks like. So it is very complicated because then you might say, well, I'm only 61. Well, maybe I'll just go ahead and retire. Well, take a look at how much money are you making. So what are you going to give up over the next 2, 3, 4 years? Number two, what kind of draw are you going to have to pay for health insurance? What are you losing as far as contributions to your 401k go? So calculate what the cost of leaving is. Now, and if you hate your job and it's miserable, then get out. But if you're like, no, I kind of like my job, you really need to take a step back and then think to yourself, where will interest rates likely be in 4 years when I was really planning to retire at 65? My guess, again, I'm not going to guarantee anything. My guess is that the Fed way overshoots this because they have to. They think they have to because of the sins of Fed past where they lightened up too early. Then they're going to have to reverse course quickly and start lowering rates again. So I believe in the next, 3 to 4 years, we could potentially see the rates start to go the other way. Well, guess what? I've now earned 3 or 4 years of income. I didn't have to pay for health insurance out of pocket. I got contributions to my retirement plan. My retirement accounts grew even more. And I'm going to have low interest rates once again to enjoy a nice fat lump sum benefit. Now, granted, I'll be a little bit older, which will drive the lump sum down a little bit, but not that much. So I'm just saying there's a lot to consider when making a decision whether or not to retire or not, lump sum or monthly payments, and it's just something that should be discussed. All right, let's take a break, come back for the final segment. This is Your Money with David Hayes. We'll be right back. You know who else I've reached out to is Jerry Sedler, who wrote the book Don't Retire, Rewire, and she had a new edition come out a few years ago. She's all about, you know, having a plan for retirement, not just jumping in because we think financially we can handle it, but having a plan, having making sure your spouse is on the same page or significant other. You know, what's that look like? Is that more the traditional view of retirement, which is basically an extended vacation, right? Just retire and do nothing? Or is it an active lifestyle? Is it doing more travel? What is it? You know, just get on the same page. So my wife and I think they're totally on the same page when it comes to retirement, and that is, I will never retire. Someone asked me this the other day, do you think you'll ever retire? My dad's 75 and still working. I mean, for Christ's sake, just take a page out of his playbook. He loves working. He loves being engaged. He loves being relevant. That was well documented on our year-end show this year where I had Dad on. We kind of had a recap of his entire working career from working at my grandpa's restaurant through real estate, through banking, and where he is today. And if he can travel when he wants to travel, relax when you want to relax, and serve when you want to serve, to me, that's a great life, and it's like being retired. So I told someone, when you see the old IU Health, if it's still that then, ambulance outside the office and a gurney's pulling me out by my feet, then you'll know that's when my last day has occurred. So I don't plan to ever quit. And Jimmy Vavano said that best, right? Never stop, never quit, never give up. And that's the way I feel about life. I feel about my career. And I feel about my purpose of being here. So listen, I've had a great time today as always. But next week, you will hear from a different group of characters. That is, of course, Dr. Doug Hughes, Wayne Thacker, Ryan Belcher, and our Medicare guru, which is Josh Norris, as we are opening or getting into Medicare open enrollment period, what you need to know all about that. Again, if you'd like to get a copy of Mary Beth Franklin's Maximizing the Social Security Retirement Benefits, they're no longer on the house that I gave away almost 19 of them. I kept one for myself. You need to go and search it, or we can send you a link and you can buy it. Again, it's like $29. It is really, really good. I mean, I'm not just pulling your chain here, guys. I mean, it is super good. So if you want to be educated on that, Medicare's in there as well. But don't forget, next week's show will be good as the guys come in and fill the shoes that I am currently in. And then I'll be back the following week. And I think I have Ed Slott on the following week, but don't hold me to that. I get a little bit confused on my programming schedule. And don't forget, 2025, the final drive, What You Need to Know to Win podcast is going strong. There'll be another episode coming out this coming Monday. Last week, we had a really great one, and this week will be on tax-free exchanges on real estate. I think people will enjoy that. Hey, have a great weekend, everyone, and I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.